We are at the Doubletree in Bloomington listening to a concession speech by Eric Paulson. This is Closing Argument. My name is Walter Atson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Andrew Lee sticking around with us for a segment or two to continue with the analysis of the results that are still just trickling in.
I'm just not quite ready to leave, Walter.
I am not quite ready to leave.
I am not giving up yet.
I appreciate that, and I am also not quite ready to fly solo this evening, so I appreciate you sticking with it. But yeah, you know, this is the mood in the room has definitely turned.
It has turned.
Over the course of the past 10, 15 minutes, and we find ourselves looking at. Now, look, I mean, we all predicted that this was going to be the outcome in the CD3 race with Paulson.
This isn't a huge shock. It's a disappointment,
right,
but not a huge shock.
Not a huge shock. And look, the numbers with 94% reporting in that district, 56-43, Phillips Paulson, is not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. It's not the numbers we've been seeing with the statewide races, like, for instance, with Attorney General right now.
And let's not downplay how hard they went after Paulson.
Right.
I mean, he was, I think, A-plus target number one in the state of Minnesota for a Dem pickup of a red seat.
Yeah.
They smelled blood in the waters. They sensed some vulnerability. And unfortunately, Eric Paulson, I don't believe, did himself too many favors with trying to run the I'm distancing myself from Donald Trump.
Just a bad play.
That hasn't played well in any race around the nation that I've seen.
Well, and who's your constituency? That's the thing, is who's left over who's like, yes, I want to vote for you.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
when you're basically saying, I'm a pox on both your houses, well, they're going to say a pox back on you. And that's what we saw tonight.
If we want to elect someone who's anti-Trump, why don't we just elect a Democrat?
Right, exactly.
Because we know he'll be anti-Trump.
So the interesting thing about this, though, is this does, because Paulson's been in that district and had a pretty solid grasp on it for quite some time, for quite a few cycles. What is this seeming shift in suburban America away from Republicans and towards Democrats? What is that signal? Where is that coming from? You know, what are some of the influences? Because, you know, the traditional media and the leftist response is going to be, well, it's a reaction to Trump.
No.
It's women who are part of the Me Too movement.
No, because this trend predates Trump. This trend predates Me Too.
Right.
You know, we've seen suburbs, and just speaking of Minnesota, but this is not a unique to Minnesota trend by any stretch. We've seen suburbs that have been traditionally red, traditionally GOP, get a little purple, get a little more purple,
right,
and then suddenly start to be more blue than purple.
Right.
This has been going on for, I'd say, at least 12 years, 12, 14 years that this trend has been moving in that direction. And there's a number of factors which, you know, that can play into it. But I think not the least of which is it's just a population change. It's just a change in the people that are living there. You're getting people that are moving out of the city, out of the urban areas, out of the denser areas. And they're like, I need a yard and I want a good school. But they take their terrible progressive values with them.
Right, right. It's like we were talking about with the migration from California to Texas, that type of thing.
Yeah.
I think also there's an interesting disparity between what the left and the media will acknowledge in terms of, you know, education. Like, they'll often say in kind of a derisive way, well, more educated people tend to vote Democrat.
Ugh.
And, you know, the suburbs are going towards Democrats as if it's some sort of virtue, but it actually runs counter to their narrative. Because their narrative is that Republicans are the party of the rich and the affluent and the powerful, when in point of fact, when you look at factors like education and income and, you know, where people live, the more affluent you are, the more you tend to be a Democrat.
And look at what's happened to, you know, the more educated people, right, are the Democrats, and they're moving here and they're bringing their fantastic values with them. Well, look what they're doing to our schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look what's happening
in
the school districts that are shifting. Let's use Edina as an example, right?
Sure.
Once, you know, for a long time, once considered the best school district in the state.
Right.
What has happened to that? It has shifted and shifted and shifted to where now people are fleeing that.
Sure.
because of all the changes in values and priorities right. there. I've seen it firsthand with Eden Prairie, with my kids.
Yeah.
I specifically chose Eden Prairie, and I moved to Eden Prairie because I wanted my kids to go to those schools. But by the time they got into high school, I was starting to regret that decision.
And this kind of goes to the broader point we've been kind of dancing around tonight when we look at, like, the Florida governor's race with between Gillum and DeSantis, and when we look at what's happening with Keith Ellison and Doug Wardlow potentially tonight. There seems to be in the culture, like, the idea of race and racial issues and racial tension and being called a racist and what is and isn't appropriate and social justice and this conversation about what political correctness and what isn't appropriate socially seems to be the number one concern on so many people's minds.
It blows me away.
The most important thing in your life is whether or not somebody has naughty thoughts about
right.
somebody's skin color.
Right. If the most important thing in your life is what other people might think
right.
and words that might come out of their mouth, not only do you have an amazing life,
yeah, right.
if that's your biggest concern, but your priorities are way out of whack. You know, I don't remember who said it, and I'm gonna butcher this quote by paraphrasing it, but something to the effect, some comedian many years ago said, you know, if you're offended, that's on you.
Right.
That is on
That's
you.
Right. That's right.
You know, I don't have to apologize for offending you.
Right.
I don't have to worry about whether or not I've offended you. You're the one that has to figure out how you're going to deal with it. This idea that the rest of the world is going to accommodate your sensibilities
right.
and your sensitivities.
Right.
And it has permeated. And it is more important than the economy. It is more important than jobs numbers. It is more important than foreign relations.
It's more important than people's actual rights.
Yes.
It's more important than your property. It's more important
right.
than your liberty.
Yep.
It's more important than your life. Like, your capacity to pursue your values takes a back seat to somebody else's feelings if they're on a higher totem than you are
right.
on the victim hierarchy.
On the victim hierarchy,
and it's
exactly.
absolutely insane that this is where we find ourselves, and I think that is really what needs to be challenged most of all.
Let's look at some numbers here. We got a few more precincts coming in. My page is refreshing as we speak, but I'm looking at about 24% in Minnesota here, and at a statewide level, still the Republicans are behind across the board. Tina Smith, 59. Karen Housley, 35. That's tightened a little, but it's still a pretty wide gap. Tim Walz, 60. Jeff Johnson, 35. Steve Simon, Secretary of State race, 59. John Howe, 36. Julie Blaha, 55. Pam Myra, 36. And Keith Ellison, 55. Doug Wardlow, 38.
Yeah, it's astounding to me that those numbers are not getting better for Doug Wardlow. I mean, they
Iron Range, you're our only hope. Iron Range, you are only hope.
Yeah, it's going to take me a while to process. If this pans out and it's that lopsided in favor of Keith Ellison, I'm going to have to, like, retreat to some sort of Tibetan monastery for 6 months.
Yeah, we're going to have to spend some time figuring this one out.
I'm going to have to reevaluate everything I think I believe and know
yeah.
in order to analyze
this. I mean, you know, my initial gut reaction is Minnesota's just that blue a state. It's just that blue a state. I mean, you know, it wasn't like Doug Wardlow was... You know, he wasn't a bad candidate. I thought he was a very strong candidate.
He was a
very strong candidate. I was very impressed with him.
Like, on the merits, in terms of qualifications and what he
yeah.
said he would do with the job, he was an astounding candidate, especially when contrasted with Keith Ellison, who's the polar opposite. Like, forget about all of the radicalization and all of the associations and all the things that he said he's going to do, which are horrifically out of alignment with what the Attorney General is supposed to be. Just on paper, like the resume the two of them are bringing to the table is insane.
I don't even want to start contemplating what Keith Ellison is going to do with that office. I am not ready to start really thinking about that because, and the absolute squandering of Minnesota resources
yeah.
that are going to be used in that office with the sole agenda of pushing back and filing lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit against the Trump administration.
Yeah, I mean, the validation of horrible behavior, horrible ideas, and malpractice with civil power is just, it's horrifying to comprehend
what
Ellison is going to do if he indeed prevails tonight. Let's talk to, I don't know if we still have him on the line. Is Mike from Farmington still with us? Mike, how you doing tonight? Oh, okay. All right. Well, he must know that it's time for us to take a break, so we'll go ahead and do that. 651-989-5855, the number to join us this evening. We are into the closing argument portion of our special election night coverage here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
Hey, it's Drew from Justice and Drew, and you're listening to
Oh, man. Yeah, so the news hasn't gotten any better.
It hasn't gotten any worse.
Yeah.
On a national level, let's look at
let's talk about a national level.
The Republicans do seem to be fending off a major blue wave. There's still a chance the Democrats have enough seats to take the House, but right now they're trending a little behind where they need to be.
Well, the page I'm looking at from the New York Times, their forecast of the direction the House is going to go has a greater than 95% chance of the Democrats taking the House.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Hello, Nick Zerwas.
We are joined by State Representative Nick Zerwas. We are, of course, broadcasting from the MNGOP Victory Party here at the Doubletree in Bloomington. Closing argument, my name's Walter Hudson. Joined by Drew Lee from Justice and Drew. He's due back in the studio in just mere hours to to analyze all this and to break it down with a very little sleep. We appreciate that. And Twin Cities.
It's hard to sleep on nights like this anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, even if I were home, I would not be able to. I wouldn't be able to call it a night
refresh,
here.
Refresh.
Yeah,
refresh.
I'd be refreshing.
So before we go to our callers, at least one of which has been holding for some time, let's get your hot take, Nick Zerwas. How are you feeling so far this evening?
Well, I think what we've seen, and I think Drew alluded to this, we have not seen nationwide a big blue wave.
Mm-hmm.
You see a trend in a presidential first midterm election of a 20-plus swing, 20 to 35 seat swing in the United States House. We're going to be probably somewhere around 25 to 30. That's not a wave. That's average.
Sure.
That's a
swell.
Nationally, that's a swell at most. That's being countermanded by what looks like a potential three or four United States Senate Republican pickup.
Right.
And so I think we see that on a national trend. Minnesota, I think it's a tale of two stories.
Sure.
You're hearing in the background Tom Emmer absolutely firing this crowd up. Again, pointing out some of the silver linings, which is the fact that we're looking at Pete Stauber, we're looking at Dave Hughes, we're looking at Jim Hagedorn, we're looking at some really nice GOP pickups. Congratulations, Jason Lewis is still ahead.
Yep, he's fending.
Breaking
Jason
news.
Jason Lewis is fending off a tough competitor. So, congratulations in Minnesota, things look positive.
Things are very positive. Fox News has called the Texas Senate race for Ted Cruz.
Oh.
So that's good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that is good.
Oh, thanks be to Jesus. Well, guys, because I'm not a giant Ted Cruz guy.
Right.
But I don't want the new model to be that a United States Senate seat costs $100 million.
Can I just pause for a moment to appreciate my congressman up there? You know, I'm sitting here on the air offering my analysis, and I heard somebody yelling and screaming and firing everybody up. I'm not at all surprised to discover that it was Tom Emmer.
Yes.
Tom Emmer is one of our great communicators, him along with Jason Lewis this state.
Just a total superstar.
Yeah.
And we're so lucky
absolutely
to have Tom Emmer in the 6th District here in Minnesota.
I agree. Let's talk to Mike in Farmington. Appreciate you holding for as long as you have. Your take on the evening's event so far.
All right. Well, thanks for taking my call, guys. And hey, Brad, I like that deep track you let in with Triumph. That's going back a ways. He always surprises me with his lead-in music.
Right.
Well, the dynamic is kind of set, I think, because if the Democrats do take the House, and that I think you said the projection was, 95% chance, But the other night I watched Paul Ryan being interviewed. And then, of course, we've seen Barack Obama out on the campaign trail. And I guess Trump's political instinct and what he's done, and you start to see the economy lift now. Now, if the Democrats get control of Congress and Maxine Waters has her revenge tour or whatever it's going to be there, and they obstruct and go into all this nonsense that they've been talking about, and people start to see things slow down and that momentum that was building is going away. And now Trump is going to, there's going to be this dynamic now where he can really go at him. And here is a guy who I saw Paul Ryan the other night. The Republicans squandered years and years, and everybody's trying to take credit for the things that have happened. Paul Ryan was on there trying to take credit, and he talked about all the bills they did. Barack Obama and his chief of staff, Valerie Jarrett, talking about, oh, this is because of Barack Obama. No, I beg to differ. It's because of Donald Trump, and I think the forgotten man and woman in this country recognizes that. So now you got to play the long game. Now we're going to have this election, and I think even if the Democrats do take the House, that this can play to Trump's favor, and he can be even more critical about how he has the proper vision to elevate the country and have things get better in this country for every man, woman in this country.
Yeah. I appreciate your call, as always, Mike. Appreciate your input. That's one way to look at the silver lining. The question, there are kind of two parallel considerations. On the one hand, you can approach it from the direction that Mike is approaching it from and ask yourself, how does Trump roll with the punch of losing the House, assuming that's what happens tonight? How does Trump roll with that punch? And then parallel, and I think almost entirely separate from that, is how does the Republican Party roll with that punch?
Well, and I think it's interesting, because if you try to draw a parallel to Bill Clinton, who got shellacked.
Right.
Shellacked in the midterms in his first term. He moderated and ended up doing a lot of, ended up being his decent stuff. Working with Newt Gingrich in the Contract for America. Now, the counterbalance to that is Barack Obama, who doubled down, who didn't moderate at all, and he led to the biggest change in state legislative seats in the pursuing next 6 years of his presidency. My fear is that Democrats in the United States Congress under Speaker Nancy Pelosi will not provide President Trump an opportunity to pivot or moderate. They will go at him full force immediately.
Can I give some congressional updates here? Boy, these races in Minnesota here are going to come down to the wire. Looking directly at the Secretary of State website, 28% reporting. Hagedorn and Feehan are tied, 50% each, with 50-49. Lewis and Craig, 49-50. Hughes and Colin Peterson, 49-50. Stauber, Radinovich, Stauber still holding a 57-38 lead in that race. But three races, dead heat, absolute virtual ties with Hagedorn, Feehan, Lewis and Craig, and Hughes and Peterson. So those are going to be ones to watch and ones to keep a very close eye on for the rest of the night.
Off of the Secretary of State's website,
They're applauding now. They're on Fox News. They're reporting on the Ted Cruz victory down in Texas. And, of course, that is fantastic news. I mean, it would have been very bad. that's my deep insight. It would have been very, very bad.
It would have been a watershed moment.
Yes, correct.
In politics in the United States.
Yes.
To know that basically, at that point, the price of a United States Senate seat is $100 million.
Yeah. Absolutely. And
what I want to show.
Frankly, the fact that it's as close as it is, because it's within 2 points.
Yes.
Right?
Well, this is launching, I mean, I'm curious if you agree, Walter. This launches Beto as a legitimate 2020
correct
presidential candidate, right?
Correct.
Bob, not
Beto. No, there will be think pieces to that effect tomorrow morning. Yes. They're probably already being written.
They were written months ago.
Yeah.
Secretary of State's website, on the Attorney General race for the state of Minnesota. Guys, I'm surprised at this with 26.7% reporting. It shows Doug Wardlow trailing Keith Ellison just under 40% to just under 55%.
Yeah, that's insane.
What the heck did I miss?
That's what I'm asking. Like, yeah. I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board to figure out how this is possible.
I'm going to be very curious to look at breakdown by congressional district. I mean, this could be simply just a function of that many more people live in CD5 and the immediate surrounding areas of CD5. You know, the CD4, CD2, CD3, right? That's too much to overcome at this point.
But I think there's some validity to really asking as a party about our basic mechanics for get out the vote. We saw on the DFL side a true machine to turn out people for early voting. We did not replicate that on the Republican side with historic early voting numbers. How much did that hurt our party?
Drew, appreciate you sticking around for a couple of segments.
I got to call it a night here. Thanks for having me.
We'll be tuning in. I will be up, so I'll be tuning in 6 a.m. to find out what's going on, what the new analysis is on Justice and Drew. Closing Argument is the name of this program. Nick Zerwas, appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, sir.
As always, my name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, Twin Cities News Talk. They had the bass going a moment ago. It sounded like that was the most somber rave party you've ever attended. I, of course, am at the MNGOP Victory Party at the Doubletree in Bloomington. And Victory is, in the beholding, as it were. Closing Argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. You have the opportunity to chime in tonight, 651-989-5855. Appreciate you doing so. My situation is at a table in press row at the Victory Party, flying solo, trying to piece together some radio for your folks while at the same time monitoring the election returns. It's a little bit of a juggling act, but I appreciate you sticking with me this evening as we go through it. I'm tempted to just kind of pivot from politics entirely and just talk about the fact that there might be an actual alien probe orbiting the sun right now, according to NBC News. Now, that sounds like a much more encouraging topic matter than what we've been going through here the last couple of hours or so. You know, it's not all bad. It's not. But there are some very discouraging developments, particularly in what I and many others have regarded as the bellwether race here in the state of Minnesota, which, of course, is the statewide contest between Keith Ellison and Doug Wardlow for Attorney General. Now, here's what's noteworthy about this. And, you know, as the recriminations begin and as we move forward from tonight to try to figure out what happened and why, I think this is going to be a noteworthy data point. So right now, with 32% reporting, this is according to the New York Times, with 32% reporting, you got Keith Ellison at 54% and Doug Wardlow at just under 40. So a significant 14-point difference. And then when you move up into looking at the governor's race, Jeff Johnson is losing by a similar margin. Tim Walz is just under 60%, and Jeff Johnson is just above 37. So there's really only like a 2-point difference in the spread between the Attorney General's race and the governor's race. Now, that to me is extraordinarily noteworthy because, you know, what I and others had predicted was that there was going to be this, that Doug Wardlow and that race, the Attorney General's race, was going to weigh heavily upon statewide results overall. So that if Doug Wardlow did very well, that was going to indicate that Republicans overall would do very well. And it appears at this point, and granted, you know, it's less than technically only a third of precincts that have been counted so far, and maybe things are going to shift dramatically over the coming hour or two. But as it stands right now, it seems very much as though there is no real leading factor, significant leading factor in terms of how the Attorney General race has gone versus every other statewide race. In other words, this is shaping up to look like, in my view, is this is shaping up to look like a very typical, a typical election, both in terms of nationally for a midterm election. It's turning out to be typical in the sense of the party out of power gains seats, gains some control. It's been called, as you heard during the bottom of the hour break, the majority in the House has been called for Democrats tonight. So they are going to, Nancy Pelosi is going to get that gavel. She is going to stir up trouble for Donald Trump. The resistance is going to be emboldened after tonight. But historically, in terms of trends, that's to be expected, that that's where we would find ourselves at this point in a president's first term. So there's nothing particularly unusual about that. And then also from a statewide perspective here in Minnesota, from a Minnesota perspective, it's certainly not unusual for Minnesota to go blue, right? Like, Minnesota has been a blue state for a very long time. I think one of the questions that was to be determined tonight was whether or not the momentum or the shift we saw in 2016 in the direction of Donald Trump, and I think it's fair at this point to say that the momentum was towards Donald Trump and not towards Republicans, if that was indicative of a redrawing of the electoral map, a significant shift in the direction of Republicans and a reshaping of how the electoral map and electoral formula is calculated. And I think what seems to be clear, at least so far, again, you know, we're only about halfway, I would judge it in terms of these results coming in. But if the trends we've seen so far pan out, it would seem to indicate that Donald Trump exists in his own universe. He exists in his own electoral and political universe that has a completely different physics. And the way that the things that work for Donald Trump do not work for anybody else. The things that Trump can get away with, nobody else can get away with. The factors, the way in which he overturns the game table and is able to make things happen electorally that people don't expect does not translate to the Republican Party generally, and it doesn't translate to any other particular Republican, and we're seeing that pan out tonight. And I don't know what to do with that in real time. I'm gonna need to spend a lot of time thinking about this and reflecting upon it and pouring through the data and analyzing it and reading other people's commentary and reflecting upon the results that we're seeing tonight. But I guess in some ways it's encouraging that there isn't this massive shift that has taken place in the way the electoral dynamics work, because what that means is for campaigners going forward is that we can break out the old playbooks and we can actually try to be a little bit more conventional in terms of our candidate recruitment and what it is that we're trying to, you know, we know the playing field. We have a better vision of what we're going to be looking for at in terms of these statewide contests here in Minnesota and in terms of trying to pursue legislative races here in the state, that there isn't some sort of mystery Trump factor that applies to every spot on the down ballot, but that the unique dynamics that are owned by Trump are unique to Trump.
Hey, Walter.
Yeah, go ahead.
When it comes to statewide races, I hate to say, but I called it.
All right.
Republicans were boring. I called this in August of 2017, that the Amy Klobuchar was going to win, Republicans were going to lose the governorship. This was even before the Al Franken news broke. But there was didn't seem to be as little or as much value proposition or as much get out the vote for Republicans in Minnesota as there was Democrats. So, I mean, you raise an interesting point as far as the get out the vote efforts by the DFL, or maybe that was Drew that said that.
Yeah.
But I wish I had a woman who checked up on me as much as the DFL did leading up to the election concerning what I was going to do, because I got 3 text messages, 2 phone calls, a postcard in the mail, a hanger at my door. It was creepy. Like, I don't need the DFL to tell me how to vote. There were a couple local candidates that I did that were DFL that I did cast my vote for, but I I didn't need the DFL to tell me to make that decision. It was just, it was a little much, but I think that Republicans statewide can take that into consideration in terms of their outreach, because certainly they're not on the same level at all. I was asking people, at least anecdotally, if they got any outreach, and there was a few here and there, but I don't think that anyone got as consistently as me in terms of contacts from the DFL, but maybe that's just me living in 55416.
No,
as well.
I got those texts as well, which is insane because I don't know how I got on those lists. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There's definitely a disproportionate amount of get out the vote operation on the Democrat side, and that's always been the case. But to your point about the Republicans being boring, it is interesting because as we move into recrimination mode and, you know, trying to figure out going through the what went wrong portion of our analysis, which, you know, I can remember the last time we did this. It was in 2012 after Romney lost. We couldn't believe that Barack Obama, after Obamacare, after the 2008 financial crisis, after the people losing their health insurance and losing their doctor, that Barack Obama somehow pulled it out and won a second term. And so, you know, there was this period of recrimination where we kind of went back to the drawing board. The Republican National Committee put together a report. They called it an autopsy on 2012 to try to figure out what went wrong. And the general consensus at that time was that Republicans needed to rethink their entire approach to constituency development and to building a bigger tent, and specifically to reaching out to minorities and to having a stronger operation moving forward that was less, as you put it, less boring and more engaging and more provocative and took more risks. It'll be interesting to see if we have a return to that style of autopsy after tonight, or if we're going to remain stuck in this idea that we need to somehow just clone Donald Trump and imagine that we're somehow going to succeed that way.
Well, I mean, back when the primaries were still going on for governor, I really liked Keith Downey. I thought that he had the personality, the stronger personality, to kind of lead from Trump's direction in terms of being willing to say what you had to say and having more of a backbone and more of an assertive personality, I would say.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. We'll continue with your election night coverage when we return. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
30 and 103.5 FM.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Man, oh man, oh man, what a night.
Wow.
This is a tough night to get through, and it's only getting tougher. Joined by Max Reimer.
Hello, hello.
KippinMax.com. Kip and Max Save the World is the name of the podcast. Of course, you're familiar with him from him filling in with Brad during my city council meetings, which, you know, just as a little frosting on the cake tonight, just got my municipal results in. The good news is we're not going to be preempted on Mondays, or I'm not going to have to be out of the studio on Mondays.
It's bad news for Brad and me.
It's bad news for Brad and Max, but I'm sure we'll find plenty of occasions for you guys to come in and help out with us. But doing recriminations on the Albertville municipal race is not what we're particularly interested in tonight. Perhaps we'll do that later in the week. We want to talk about what's happening statewide and nationally here. And, you know, we just had you sit down with us, Max.
Yes.
Your hot take on the status of things so far.
Well, I will say, you look at the results statewide, we are certainly not having a blue wave nationwide. It looks like we'll have a modest loss in the House, which a lot of people predicted. We'll actually pick up seats in the National Senate. It can't be said for Minnesota. I mean, this is a blue wave, what we're seeing in the state of Minnesota right now. Our statewide candidates are losing by 20-ish points. You have Wardlow, who is on the fringes right now of losing this race by 20-plus points. Everybody. I mean, Karen Halsey's race got called within minutes.
Yeah.
It's about as devastating a loss. It looks like, I mean, we still have 30 to 40% of the state only reporting, so right. You could have an outstate surge. certainly it does not look like that will be enough to make up the deficits here. I mean,
if it was close, perhaps, but it's not.
Yeah, and for our listeners, we should note, not every race has gotten called yet. I mean, none of the races except for our two Senate seats have gotten called yet. So there is that. But my goodness, man, statewide 20-plus point deficits right now for our candidates. It for our listeners, I mean, it is really about as devastating as you can possibly imagine for our candidates. So there will be some lessons that are hopefully learned from this experience. I think the biggest thing that we can take away, at least what I'm thinking about, is there is certainly a repudiation of Donald Trump in the state of Minnesota. We had a great slate of candidates. We had very strong statewide candidates.
That's the thing. When I woke up this morning and I went to go vote, first thing, I've never been prouder to vote for a slate of Republican candidates than I was.
At least on the statewide.
Yeah.
I mean, from Jim Neuberger, who gave it his best shot, we knew what that result was going to be. But you look at the profile, right, of somebody like Karen Housley, and you're going, this can work.
Yeah, absolutely.
This can compete.
Yep.
And here we are looking at results that are just about as dramatic as you can possibly imagine in terms of a loss.
Yeah.
So it looks like the projected winner of the governor's race, Tim Walz, just got called, it looks like, by Fox 9.
Yeah.
And he is currently ahead for our listeners, he's currently ahead by 20 points.
20 points.
And it just got called.
20.
That's incredible.
It's astounding. I want to know how Tim Pawlenty's feeling tonight. I'd like to talk to Kip tonight, right now.
Well, I mean, who knows how this thing could have played out one way or the other, but you look at a result like that.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff Johnson's done. I mean, I don't think you...
Well, I think Fox 9 just called it.
No, I'm saying in terms of future runs.
Yeah, I think, you know, three statewide losses. I love Jeff. I worked for Jeff on this campaign. You know, we'll see what happens with him.
Yeah.
Can't do better than a guy like that, though, in terms of a candidate.
Let's start getting through some of these calls. Appreciate you guys contributing to the program tonight. Hopefully you'll be able to find some silver linings. Let's start with Tim in Rochester. Welcome to Closing Argument. You're on with Max Reimer and Walter Atzen.
Hey, Walter. Hey, Max.
Hey.
How's it going tonight?
Good.
It's okay.
My biggest comment on as far as nationally goes is it's not so much what the Republicans did, it's what they didn't do. I mean, when Democrats took the House, the Senate, the presidency in, 2008, they started throwing bombs down the field. They got Obamacare. They got whatever the stupid banking bill was. And the Republicans, yes, who passed the tax cuts, and then they went into a prevent defense. And instead of, you don't have the media on their side, but and with a president who gets pounded every day, you have to get out there and start doing things. And once the tax cuts went through, and then they quietly did a bunch of other things that helped the economy, but it was all quiet. So,
yeah,
you do the bold things that were going to pull people to the polls, get those Trump voters to come across again and support Republicans again.
Yeah, I appreciate your call, Tim. I appreciate the insight. I'm not sure.
I don't know about that. I don't know about the hypothesis. In fact, quite frankly, I don't know about if there was anything that could have been done at this point. You look at some of, specifically in Minnesota, our deficits and what that means for Republicans.
Right.
This, to me, just feels like some inevitability, quite frankly.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think with when you're talking about 20-point loss, I don't think you could point to one thing and say, this is the thing, this is the reason. You know, there is something fundamentally wrong. And at this point, I can't even begin to identify what it is.
No, I agree with you. And to the caller's point, you know, talking about, well, we weren't aggressive enough after tax reform and we didn't accomplish enough of our agenda necessarily. Listen, I don't even know about that. I don't know if Republicans would have repealed and, quote-unquote, replaced Obamacare.
Sure.
I don't foresee that changing a result like this. It really does feel like an inevitability.
So here's, this is, and we'll come back on the other side of the break and get into this a little bit more deeply, and we'll continue to take your calls at 651 989-5855. But the general sense, you know, put in a position where I have to have something to say about this right now, this, our problem is cultural. There is a culture problem, not just in this state, but in this country right now, in terms of, because what voting is in large part, it's virtue signaling. It's signaling what kind of person you are. And you hear this in campaign rhetoric all the time. What kind of a state are we? You know, what type of a nation are we? Appeals to, quote unquote, our values and Minnesota's values. So there's this sense in which people are trying to project their image of themselves in how they cast their ballot. And obviously here in the state of Minnesota, when you're looking at a 20-point loss by Jeff Johnson to Tim Walz, the everything that Tim Walz claims to stand for and that the DFL claims to stand for is the image that people in this state want to project about themselves.
No doubt.
And so the question, and we'll come back and address it when we get on the other side, is how do we even begin to unravel that cultural knot?
There's a lot.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Max Reimer in with us. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Max Reimer with me here at the MNGOP Victory Party. Not so aptly named.
Victory is an interesting word for what's happening right now.
Right. And the mood, as you might imagine, has turned very somber earlier in the evening. Lots of cheers, lots of energy, lots of positivity. Kind of a mirror image of what we saw from the Democrats in 2016, where they were very, I mean, the difference being we weren't cocky about it. Like, we didn't think, oh, we're going to take it, you know.
No, I don't think anyone thought that. But you had rumbles kind of moving throughout the room, because you had 538, which immediately moved their projections to the National House being kept by Republicans just based on their modeling.
Yeah.
And you had a few people talking about that, and a certain buzz in the air. That has all but dissipated from this room. I mean, there is no... You have people slowly clapping to see modest Jason Lewis results kind of pour in, and Jim Hagedorn losing by a little bit. And you have some applause that's happening there. Tom Emmer energized the room after Eric Paulson got pretty well handled. And here we are. The electoral map changes a little bit in Minnesota.
All right, let's go to your thoughts, your calls, 651-989-5855. Karen in Coon Rapids is first up. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Hi. I think you were kind of already touching on what I was kind of wanting to ask about. It just in Minnesota, I mean, I would say whatever victories we have, we take, because they're there, and that's great, because nothing seems surprising, you know, tonight. And it just seems like the entire thing is just, it's straight party lines, geographically, demographics, and population in this state. And I just don't know if you could ever figure out how we can make a shift in that, because it seems like locally, or, you know, state-wise, it's as predictable as could be. Yeah. And then you saw the national with Trump, you know, for a federal election, and it just, I don't know if it maybe gave us more of the positive feelings that we could do this, and maybe how to figure out for the next 2 years what have we done wrong, and maybe how to go about that forward, because it, like with Ellison and watching the Ilhan Omar victory speech, you know, tonight was, you know, she didn't say anything about, she, it was just her and who got her there, and that was it. Nothing about what she was going to do for Minnesota's or her district or anybody else that she's going to represent. It was just all about that one massive progressive thing she's going to try and do, and it, you're not really representing. So that's confusing and scary.
I appreciate
and your thoughts on that, maybe.
I appreciate your call, Karen. Yeah, you know, Karen speaks to an emergent theme that popped into my head during the top of the hour break, which is that, and this is, you know, granted, The disclaimer here is I'm in a very dark place right now. Okay, I'm in a very dark place at this moment. So take it with a grain of salt. But if I had to summarize my immediate lesson learned from tonight, it's that substance doesn't mean anything.
No.
Substance in politics means precisely nothing.
Right.
Nothing at all.
No, I think that's a fair lesson. I think that's a fair lesson you can take from previous elections, quite frankly, because you had other candidates who have been defeated in the past by people who don't have substance. You know, Keith Ellison is a classic example of a guy who just keeps on winning and who has no substance. You know, to Karen's point, the caller, geographically, demographically, etc., we do have to, you never want to overreact one way or the other to losses like this. I mean, what we witnessed for the last 2 years was a Democratic Party that kicked and flailed and really overreacted. And, you know, they got a result tonight, but ultimately what we do need to do is become somewhat introspective about what we do going forward. Because in Minnesota, not only did a guy like Eric Paulson lose on the congressional level, it looks like every single House member in CD3 is about to lose their seat incumbency.
Right.
Every single one. I mean, you had Maple Grove, which was kind of a conservative staple. You have Cindy Pugh, who's in the fight for her life in Lake Minnetonka over there in a pretty affluent district. Dario Anselmo lost in Edina. There are all sorts of losses that are happening at the statewide level. In fact, it looks like we're going to lose our state house majority in this election. So we need to kind of regroup a little bit here and figure out, okay, what does it look like going forward? Because there is no doubt what we're looking at right now in the state of Minnesota, there is certainly a blue wave that is happening. I mean, these results are unheard of. The statewide elections, we're going to lose by margins that have not been seen in the state of Minnesota before.
Yeah.
I mean, that really should shock the system. And if we don't, you know, if we don't analyze who we are as a party in the state of Minnesota going forward, I don't know what happens.
Well, and to that end, let's reflect upon the way the Democrats responded to their loss in 2016 and try to take away some lessons in terms of what we shouldn't do and how we shouldn't react. The one thing we shouldn't do is assume that the voters are all stupid and that, you know, we need to double down on what we've done already and just do it harder, and that that's somehow going to result in us being able to make a comeback. There is a need, a necessity to engage in a step one ground level drawing board process of, okay, let's reevaluate, let's question everything.
Yeah,
everything needs to be on the table in terms of what we're willing to take a look at in terms of what went wrong. Because as you cite, this is beyond anybody's predictions of how bad it would be.
Yeah, you look at the actual numbers that are popping up right now, and it is worse than Republicans have experienced in the past with far less capable, far less credentialed candidates who have gotten better percentages. And I do wonder also, there's something to be said about elections being about momentum, being about waves, getting people out to, you know, who want to vote or who have a specific cause to vote. I don't know. I just feel like Democrats had a cause, and that cause was to oppose the president, and I think that is primarily what we are seeing in the state of Minnesota right now. I mean, Trump, especially in the metro, you can look at Eric Paulson's loss as a case study. That entire district, Trump, the highest Trump ever polled in that entire district was probably 32%. Hillary won the district by 12 plus points, and it just took the right combination of candidates and combination of timing, and Eric Paulson voted quite a bit with Donald Trump, and here we are, man. He loses a seat.
So here's a question I'm going to dare to ask. Is there an opening here, you know, and recognizing who's asking the question, is there an opening here for the resurgence of Never Trump? Like, is there a case to be made? Does the National Review crowd get to engage in a little bit of chest thumping tonight and say, see, we told you so. This is what he was going to do to our party, and here the chickens are coming home.
Oh, well, that will happen. Right. That will happen.
But is it merited, though?
I don't know if it's merited, because we're going to pick up a few seats in the Senate, too, for candidates that have clung to Trump.
Sure.
I mean, North Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp got slaughtered because she is, quite frankly, not pro-Trump enough.
Right.
And a few other candidates who are... But listen, the toothpaste is out of the tube in a lot of ways. I don't know where we go from here in terms of what our message is, because we did divulge so far from the typical conservative message in order to accommodate the movement that Trump was leading. And I think there are pros to that. I think there are certainly cons to that. We just lost the Twin Cities Metro for God knows how long because we're not a Chamber of Commerce party anymore. Period. I mean, we are not this moderate, pro, you know, cheap labor, immigrant party anymore because of who our figurehead is. And I will tell you, there are neighborhoods in Bloomington when I ran in 2016 that would have told you neighborhoods that would have voted for Romney 60% of the time and Trump 10% of the time. We're kind of at the whim of the head of our party. I don't know what to say about that.
Speaking of National Review, there was a piece earlier today where the headline was "Tomorrow the Rhinos will take their revenge." And basically the thesis of the piece was they predicted tonight's results, they predicted that this was the way it was going to go, and they pointed to exactly what Max just outlined, which is that for all the talk of rhinos that came out of the Tea Party in the years leading up to the presidency of Donald Trump, what was never really acknowledged by Republicans such as myself, activists such as myself, who were railing against those rhinos, was that that on top of being rhino legislators...
Yep.
They were supported by rhino voters. In other words, there's a constituency. By saying, oh, you're Republican in name only, you're not just denigrating the person that was elected, you're denigrating the people who elected them.
Of course, and you think about specifically in the Twin Cities, specifically in Minnesota, you had guys like Randy Johnson, the long-term Hennepin County Commissioner, who... for all I know, did vote for guys like Eric Paulson, but probably not for Donald Trump, come out and say, I'm voting straight DFL now.
Yeah.
Now, I think you are an unprincipled hack when you do that. I personally think that you had no moral fiber to begin with, if that's the route that you go. Just because we are, and you know this better than anybody knows this, we are on two just totally different moral spectrums. I cannot vote for... If I were to not vote for a Republican, there's no way in HE double hockey sticks I would vote for someone from the DFL. It's
right.
just...
Right.
There's not a moral equivalency there in my mind. But you did have guys like Randy Johnson
right.
who said, I'm voting straight DFL now. That is a little bit of a shock to the system. And, you know, as we audit this whole election after tonight, it'll be interesting to see what the pundits come up with. And what happens next? Because I don't know. We got killed in the Metro, period. Hey, for all of our listeners out there, killed. I mean, it has been a bloodbath. The Red Wedding in Game of
yep.
Thrones.
651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Max Reimer in with me, breaking down the devastation we're experiencing this evening. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Listening to yet another concession speech here at the MNGOP
yeah.
Victory Party at the Doubletree in Bloomington. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. Two ways to stream us. Appreciate you joining us. Usually here 9 to 11 weeknights. For those of you tuning in for our special election coverage, Max Reimer of Kip and Max Save the World, which you can find at kipandmax.com. Sticking with me here at the press table on Press Row as we take in this somber, somber mood.
And it is Karen Housley who is conceding right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's Karen Housley who, you know, listen, setting the results aside, put on just a fantastic show in terms of the campaign she laid out and the offering she gave to the people of Minnesota. It's a shame
There's no doubt.
It didn't connect.
I felt very good about her chances. And for the listeners at home, Karen Housley is behind us right now, conceding the race. Karen Housley is currently down 21 points. I want to repeat that. Karen Housley to Tina Smith, the appointed senator, appointed by Mark Dayton, replacement for Al Franken, 21 points.
And that's just indicative of what we've been seeing all night. You know, I pointed out earlier, and now it's 30 only. I'm surprised that it's still only 36% in the report of the precincts reporting. But 54% Keith Ellison, 40% Doug Wardlow, 14 points behind. You scroll up to the governor's race. Of course, that's been called for Tim Walz and Jeff Johnson. The difference isn't that big. I mean, it's like a 4-point difference in terms of the spread between those two races, and that plays out with all of the statewide races. There was no real standout here in terms of a candidate that did significantly better than the other candidates, which indicates that people went to the polls and they just went straight party line Democrat.
Yep. And here's some kind of takeaway for the listeners at home. Jim Hagedorn is performing very well in CD1. Looks like he's a few points ahead with about half the precincts reporting. You got a guy like Jim Hagedorn who wins. If Jason Lewis holds his spot, and it's still a pretty close race in his congressional district, they've not called that one. In fact, I think it's within 1 point. If you got Jim Hagedorn who wins, if you have Jason Lewis who wins, if you have a guy like Dave Hughes pulling upset, and then Stauber is cleaning house in CD8, that's a net plus one in the House in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So do with that what you will.
Right.
A net plus one in the House, but we get our clocks clean statewide. Well, it tells you that the metro we have just lost a huge foothold.
Well, and that circle is widening. It's widening out into the suburbs, and it's getting bluer and darker blue, and that's going to have to be addressed moving forward. All right, is Barry in St. Paul still waiting with us?
Yep.
All right, Barry, let's hear what you have to say tonight.
So I know why, at least in Minnesota, I can't speak to nationwide, why this happened. Because the last election, the only reason why we won what we won was because the Democrats were fractured because of the fight between Bernie and Hillary. And now that they're not fractured and they have something to rally against, Trump, now they're all voting Democrats the way the Democrats want them to vote, and they're all coming out. This is not a surprise, and anybody to think it is, it's delusional.
All right. Appreciate the take, Barry. Appreciate the insight. You know, I can't throw too many tomatoes at that. I wouldn't put it quite so dramatically or definitively, but his core point of being that they have reason to unify right now as opposed to 2016,
yeah,
certainly has merit.
Well, and I think we all knew that Trump was going to be a unifying call for them. What I'm surprised by is how legitimate that unifying call was. To hate somebody has never worked in an election before. You know, to go against somebody, to be unified against something.
Right.
Your conventional wisdom tells you that typically doesn't work. You want to run for something. You want to run for a cause. You don't want to run necessarily against something. But, man, I mean, it has been a unifying cry for the Democrats, to the caller's point. It is just more legitimate than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I agree. Let's hear from Ron in Wisconsin. Appreciate you joining us, your insights. Ron, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good, yourself.
Doing all right. All things
considered. I just have only one question. I'm from, I'm actually in Wisconsin. I drive truck for a living.
Yep.
I'm from southwest Minnesota. I was just wondering how Tim Miller did in 17A.
Oh, well, I haven't gotten down that deep into the House races, but we can take a look. It sounds as though the legislative races, I mean, what district is that, 17A?
17A?
Yeah, whereabouts is that? What does that cover?
Suburban Olivia district? Hunch, that area.
What was it?
Down by Olivia, Marshall, that area.
So more rural?
Yeah.
I would assume that there's a decent chance that he did all right. I'm just being being approached by my own state representative, Eric Lucero, recognized that I was on the air and turned and walked away. We didn't talk to him. Appreciate your call, Ron.
You bet.
Yeah, 17A, that is that's Tim Miller.
I'll try to look
assume,
it up.
I would assume that he's okay.
What was that, Brad?
Oh, I'll try to look it up.
Okay, all right. So, yeah, I mean, look, I feel a punch to the gut right now that it, both in terms of the results themselves and also the sense that of not having a clear sense, you know, despite Barry's confidence, I admire Barry's confidence. This is the reason why.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I don't have that. I don't have a sense of confidence as to what's going on. I have ideas.
For sure.
And I there's definitely merit in all of them. But as to which is the most meritorious or which combination of them proves the most accurate, that's something that's going to take a long time and a lot of thoughtful consideration and analysis to develop any sort of conclusion.
Oh, I think I definitely agree. We can prognosticate all we want in the midst of this devastation. The fact that we have statewide candidates right now that are going to lose, it looks like by at least 13 to 14 points. That was never supposed to happen, and quite frankly is somewhat unprecedented in the state of Minnesota. Now, I know that we're a blue state. I think we've always been a blue state. It would have been some great pickup opportunities with great candidates, but for us, for Team Red to be rebuked the way that we have been rebuked tonight, is quite frankly unprecedented in our history. I mean, you have statewide candidates, like I say, that are going to lose by 20-plus points. You have Doug Wardlow, who's going to lose by about 20 points. I mean, these are things that you could not have predicted. DFLers, hardcore DFLers.
Right.
We're not predicting this.
They were blaming Karen Monahan for Ellison's loss.
Already.
That they presumed was coming.
Yes. Yes.
So in some ways, Ellison Wardlow is like an inversion of Clinton Trump. Where even his own side, you know, with us, we had many Republicans, myself included, who presumed Trump was going to lose.
Yep.
And he managed to defeat Hillary Clinton. And in similar sense, many Democrats, whether they were public about it or not, who presumed that Ellison was going to lose. And now we see this.
Well, and I would even say it's probably worse in this case, because I actually don't know how many DFLers were actually... Because when Trump was running, you still had the Trump contingent that knew, just knew he was going to win. Just die on the hill, this guy will win. I communicate pretty regularly with DFL activists.
Yeah.
Diehards who thought he could still win,
right,
but thought it was going to be, you know, maybe your 1 point win. The fact that we're looking at still a 20 point deficit, you can't predict this stuff. I mean, no one did.
In answer to Ron's question, Tim Miller is up 55 to 44 in 17A with 30% reporting. So there's
Tim should be pretty safe in that seat. You know, I actually think a lot of our outstate seats are going to be safe, and it actually looks like we're going to retain control in the Minnesota State Senate with the Senate District 13 seat.
All right, we'll continue to hear from you when we return and break this down as best we can. 651-989-5855, closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, Twin Cities News Talk.
103.5 FM.
So, it's just me for these last two segments. Walter Hudson, closing argument. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Manning the fort at the MNGOP Victory Party, not so aptly named, at the DoubleTree in Bloomington. And we're gonna get into it now, because I have no choice. I got time to fill, and I got to tell you what's on my mind. So I'm gonna give you my raw reaction to what it is that we're experiencing right now, which, again, in case you need an update, is a complete devastation of the Republican ticket here in the state of Minnesota, the loss of the House nationally, what could very credibly be called a repudiation of the current state of the Republican Party, Yeah, I've seen. It's interesting because during the break, I checked social media and saw some characterizations by people who I respect of this as being right in line with what you expect. You know, I guess there, from a certain perspective, there are certain angles in which I agree with that. From the perspective of it being a midterm and you expect there to be a loss of power by the party in power, yes, that's true. A repudiation of the sitting president, no matter who he is, yes, that's true. In the sense that this is a blue state and you expect it to go to Democrats and statewide elections have traditionally gone for Democrats, yeah, that's true. That is what we traditionally and historically would expect. We wouldn't expect it with these margins, though. I mean, these margins are insane. We've been talking about it here tonight. And Max Reimer, who was in with us for the last half hour or so, was putting not too fine a point on it. You're talking about spreads that are approaching, you know, it's 20 points at least. And some of the spreads are north of 20 points. I mean, this is blowout territory. This is landslide territory in terms of the defeat of Republicans. And all of this is in a context where the slate of candidates that was put up statewide this time around in Minnesota, on paper, like just judging it on its substance, you can't fault it. Like the qualifications of Pam Myra for state auditor, the qualifications of Doug Wardlow for attorney general, and the contrast between Doug Wardlow and Keith Ellison, it doesn't get any clearer, and which all of which leads to my initial knee-jerk, you know, hot takeaway from tonight, which is that substance in politics, substance does not matter at all. Right now at the MNGOP party, Jeff Johnson is just taking the stage, offering his concession speech. Which, you know, again, third statewide loss for Jeff Johnson. And listen, Jeff is a great guy. Jeff is somebody who I got to know personally over the last few years, and just a stand-up human being who has done his best as the dissenting vote on the Hennepin County Commission and the Hennepin County Board. He's done a remarkable job, and he has fought the good fight in terms of advocating for the right policies. And unlike a lot of politicians, let me say this about Jeff Johnson. Unlike a lot of politicians, particularly politicians in this party, Jeff not only knows what he believes, but he knows why he believes it. He has put some thought into, you know, why he has arrived at the positions that he holds. And he can sit down with you and look you in the eye and explain to you why he has the position that he does. That is unfortunately rare in those personages who we select to represent us on the ballot. And so, you know, in that respect, very fortunate to have had him, but he just suffered a 20-point blowout. And that's what we have to, that's what we're left to reconcile. We're left to reconcile how could we put up such substance in contrast to such, to the likes of Keith Ellison? How could we do that and still lose by this margin? That is a question that's going to have to be answered moving forward. All right. Is Bill on still with us?
Yep.
All right, Bill. It's on you. Light my spirits.
Walter, I got to talk you off the ledge, buddy. It's not as bad as you're putting it out there. The 20-point deficit you're talking about, that was a couple of hours ago because the out-state results haven't come in. When it's all said and done, our statewide ticket will have lost by single digits. And who knows? They haven't called the auditor's race. They haven't called the AG race. That might be low single digits in how that one goes. What you're reacting to is that Hennepin County, which is awfully blue, reported all their results right away. And it's skewed what you're seeing tonight. Yeah, Republicans got killed in the suburbs. My state rep is hanging on by about 19 votes last time I checked, and there's two liberal, two conservative districts to go. But it's not as bad as 08. It's not as bad as 06 even. This is a typical Democrat year with maybe just a breeze of blue air blowing through the state. So let the results come in from out state, and it's not going to look as bad. You're going to see a lot of single-digit losses, not 20 points below.
So let me ask you this. You don't take away any sort of unique insight in Doug Wardlow being paired against Keith Ellison and basically doing no better than any other statewide candidate. Like, that contrast
is doing better. Right now,
he's doing like 2 points better.
He's within 10, and they haven't called it yet. And so,
okay,
versus Jeff Johnson, I get it. Because, you know what? Jeff is going against Tim Walz, who, let me give you a technical argument here. Walz is used to getting 50% of the vote in first district. As a statewide Republican candidate, you can't see 50% in the first district when you're statewide. That's why Jeff Johnson's going to lose. He's also going to lose because Tim Walz is one of these guys, or even Brad is like, oh, yeah, I like Tim Walz. I probably voted for him today. Like, Jeff Johnson's boring. Right?
I did not.
So good. Thanks, Brad. But you have that dynamic going between those guys. But so, like, these no-name candidates, it's going to be kind of close. It's going to be within single digits. And we're not seeing the blue wave other than, you know, the suburban anti-Trumpism that's, well, it's been here since 2016. Minnesotans in the suburbs hate Donald Trump. Minnesotans out state love him. And it's screwing up our politics.
So what do we do with that, though? Like, what difference does it make? How what are we supposed to take away from this result? You know, even if it's as rosy as you're looking to paint it, how do we do anything of any value with that moving forward?
I don't know, because the whole Trump thing, at least in Minnesota, absolutely fractures our coalition. Because our country club suburban types, they can't vote for the guy. And our anemic, like, he's done terribly out west and in the southern district forever. But Trump turned that around. So, and I don't know what you do as a Republican candidate. I don't know how you appeal to both sets. I don't know how you rally both of them. But the DFL hasn't figured it out either. Yeah, they're killing us in the suburbs. They're going to win statewide like they always do. So, it's situation normal.
I would have to, you're going to have to convince me. You haven't so far. We'll take a look at the numbers in the coming days and hours and see if that pans out. But I appreciate your insights, of course. 651-989-5855, closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. One segment yet to go on this devastating evening here tonight in Minnesota. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
Spend all your time waiting for that second.
That's about it. That's about right. That's about where we're at tonight. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. 651-989-5855. You want to squeeze in a reaction here on this bad night for Republicans by any objective measure. We've been talking about it. 4 hours of radio tonight. Started off with Justice and Drew. Had Max Reimer on for a good portion of the program. It's been something. It's definitely been the most emotional night of radio that I've done since first coming on the air almost 2 years ago. So I want to spend this final segment kind of offering, again, sort of my raw insights, raw reactions to what we're experiencing this evening. And, you know, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I'm going to go back to the contrast between Keith Ellison and Doug Wardlow. Because here's the thing, and you know, even though I'm going back to that race, I am going to make a slightly different point than I have made up to this time of the night. What you see, like, you go down the list of things that can be said about Keith Ellison: support for cop killers, advocacy for Antifa, support for violence in political discourse, association with the Nation of Islam, association with Louis Farrakhan, open anti-Semitism, what he advocates for in public policy. You know, he's a socialist, an avowed socialist who wants to fulfill Obama's vision to fundamentally transform the United States into something other than the United States. I mean, you just go down the list, right? All of those things, what people decided tonight in Minnesota by a 20-point margin, was that all of that is nothing in comparison to Doug Wardlow being racist, or Doug Wardlow being homophobic, or Doug Wardlow being a misogynist. Now, I'm not saying that Doug Wardlow is any of those things. I don't believe he is any of those things. But just the idea, where we're at in society, in American society, and certainly here in the state of Minnesota, is we're at a point where people care more about whether or not somebody is a racist, whether or not somebody has bad thoughts. They care more about that than about whether or not somebody is violent. They care more about that than about whether or not some people's rights are upheld. They care more about how certain people feel than whether or not certain people are free. That's where we're at. That's the takeaway from tonight. This is a cultural crisis that we're experiencing. And it's going to require a cultural solution. I'll tell you one thing. And those of you who listen to the program for some time, you know I'm Christian. We have, in fact, later this week, we're going to have Pastor Nathan Roberts in to post-game this election and talk about it from a Christian perspective. Here's what I hear God telling me tonight as a believer, as a Christian. Politics is not how this is going to change. Politics is not how we're going to claim victory for righteousness. It's not going to happen that way. It's not going to happen through an act of Congress. It's not going to happen because of a bill advanced in the legislature. It's not going to happen because a certain person got elected. It's not going to be something that you're going to be able to do as part of a community or part of a Tea Party group or part of a libertarian coffee weekend get together. Like, it's not going to be something you're going to be able to do part-time. It's not. The task before us is nothing less than the redemption of our culture as such. And we're talking about a fundamental redemption. We're talking about a reformation of people's understanding of what it means to be an American. Because that's what people have indicated tonight with this vote is that the most important defining aspect of being an American and being a Minnesotan is not being a racist as defined by the left, or not being misogynist as defined by the left. In other words, the signaling of virtue is a superior consideration than the actual maintenance of rights. And people believe this. They believe it in their hearts and their minds, and they are willing to take action, in this case electoral action, consistent with that belief. And so long as that is the case, we're so far afield from being at a point where politics is capable of solving our problems. You know, if this is the context that we find ourselves in, where the culture is able to produce this kind of a result, then the work before us is much more comprehensive, much deeper than anything we've contemplated up to this point. But here's the good news. I'll try to end on a happy note here tonight. I know it's been pretty dark this evening. Here's the good news. The task is broader and deeper than we imagined. It's going to require more work than we previously imagined. But here's what's also true about the task that lies before us. It's local. It's local. It's personal. It's relational. And in that sense, it's surmountable. It's something that you can do. Here's the thing, you know, and there we've debated about the merits of political engagement. We've had people call into the program, and we've even had debates between Brad and I about the relative merits of being involved in the voting process and the party process and what have you. You can make a case that national politics or even statewide politics is too big for you to make a difference, right? That, you know, you live in a blue state, and so what does it matter how you cast a vote for president? You can make that case and actually have some merit to it. And in doing so, excuse yourself from the responsibility of engaging in that way. You can say, look, there's nothing I can do about national politics, so I'm not going to bother. And it's a case that's not entirely without merit, whether I agree with it or not. What you can't do is excuse yourself from the interpersonal local relational responsibility that you have to be a part of the people, a part of people's lives right around you in your community, your family, your church, your neighborhood, the place where you live. That is a sphere where we all have influence. Each and every one of us has the ability to make a difference with the person sitting across from us at a table, with the person whose eyes we're looking into. We all have the power to make a difference in that context on that level. And so that's the good news, is that if we embrace the cultural mission that we have been delivered tonight, which is a mission to change hearts and minds and to reorient principles and to reorient priorities and basically to build a new culture. If we embrace that mission, the good news is no matter where we are and no matter who we are and no matter our ability, our personal ability, with the help of God, we can do it. We can overcome. We can surmount the task that's been placed before us because it's a task that is personal. It's a task that's ours. And so, you know, that's what I'm going to take out of tonight. Is for the past 2 years, you know, the 2 years that we've been on the air, and the broader context of what else is going on in my life or has been going on in my life as I've been doing this show, there has been a general lack of focus in just in me personally in terms of where I've been directing my energies. After tonight, I have an opportunity to shift focus. And I don't know exactly what that's going to look like moving forward, but I can tell you this. I'm inclined to shift focus towards this personal sphere, towards doing something with a person sitting across from me at a table, to actually building relationships that are going to result in the transmission of values that over time and over generations changes the culture. And I would encourage, you know, as we all engage in our recriminations, as we wake up tomorrow and start pointing fingers at each other or trying to cast blame for why it is that we find ourselves in this situation, let's try to come back to that. Let's try to come back to the conviction that we have an opportunity to, you know, being handed this scenario where we're starting from square one and we're building from the ground up. We have an opportunity to do precisely that, to build from the ground up. And what an opportunity that is. That's what I'm going to leave you with here tonight on Closing Argument. We'll be back 9 to 11 tomorrow. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Lynn Beck is next. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.